Before we get to tonight's Survivor Know-It-Alls for episode number 8 of The Edge of Extinction, I want to take a moment and thank our friends over at ZipRecruiter for sponsoring this episode of Rob Has a Podcast. Now, trying to get hiring right when you're looking to land a new candidate can be more confusing than trying to figure out the rules of The Edge of Extinction, but ZipRecruiter makes it easy. That's why you can go ahead and try it for free over at ZipRecruiter.com/survive. What ZipRecruiter does is that they are going to send your job posting out to 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience, and Survivor players can tell you just how important your resume is. Just make sure to have your address at the top and don't put 4444 Edge of Extinction Drive. But ZipRecruiter is going to scan all of the resumes and all those addresses to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply for your job. And as applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each and every one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. And ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of the employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. So right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free with this exclusive address, ZipRecruiter.com/survive. That's ZipRecruiter.com/survive. That's S-U-R-V-I-V-E, ZipRecruiter.com/survive. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor Know-It-Alls.
Yes, that is right. What's going on, all you nards? It's Rob and Steven back for the Survivor Know-It-Alls episode number 8 recap of Survivor Edge of Extinction. Steven Fishback.
Don't get excited.
Why? Don't get excited about what?
Wasn't that Ream's line?
Ream.
Oh, I'm sorry that I didn't do the full on Robin.
Don't get excited, okay?
I thought about trying to, and then I was like, you know what? It's just going to be worse if I try.
Steven, as the host of Paraphrase Podcast, when Eric said that he felt like that Extinction Island was going to be the Crucible, was that a literary reference?
I mean, there's a lot of crucibles out there. I don't think he was necessarily referring to the Arthur Miller play. You know, it's not really like Salem witch trials-y. I think there's many crucibles. It doesn't have to be literary.
Aubrey hails from that area.
Yeah, that's right. So it could have been. Maybe that's Rob, I want to quote another grand dam of Survivor, not Ream. I'm pissed. I was so worked up. It's Sandy Bergen for those who
know.
Okay, I just maybe not.
Yeah, believe me. I got it.
Okay. I got so worked up watching this episode. Thank you very much. I mean, I'm amazed at like how
older
fast
lady.
You were able to put that on.
Yeah.
It's a professional operation you got going on.
Not my first rodeo. Yeah.
Yeah. I just like literally infuriates me when I see people making a huge self-destructive move just to like have a Survivor resume at the final 12. I mean,
okay.
I actually get angry.
All right. Well, we will talk about that here tonight, that Steven Fishback is thinking this was a bad move for some.
Were you not thinking this is a bad move?
I think that for some people it was a great move, and for some people it was a less great move.
But the people who made the move happen, it was a bad move for those people, the two prime movers.
I can't wait to talk it through with you here tonight on the Survivor Know-It-Alls live after episode number 8 of The Edge of Extinction. And I thought this was another good episode. And so I'm excited to get into it here tonight. Of course, Steven, your friend and mine, Abby Maria, will be my guest tomorrow. I'm going to go see Abby Maria in person tomorrow.
No. Oh, wow.
Yes. Yeah.
See where the Brazilian dragon lives.
See what the Brazilian dragon is thinking. I saw somebody on Twitter said, oh, Rob is talking to Abby Maria. I guess that means Kelly Wentworth is getting voted out tonight. Uh-oh. Because that's, of course, anybody who's been a fan of this podcast for the past 9 years knows that's how I book the interviews.
No one's been a fan of this podcast for that long.
Are you a fan of Robin's podcast? So Dr. Mike will be my guest on this week's feedback show. Going to talk to him on Friday night to get your feedback questions in for Dr. Mike. And then Jenny Autumn will be our guest on This Week in Survivor, plus Wiggle Room as well this week. So it should be another jam-packed week on Rob Has a Podcast. All right, Steven. So I'm presuming that you feel like that there were members of the comma six that you feel like made the wrong decision tonight.
Yes. And I have to assume you agree with me that this was a terrible choice for Gavin and Julia, where, you know, and they're at the final 12, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of game left. As I noted in my blog, that until Survivor Samoa, they're, you know, the final 12 wasn't even the merge, you know, like no season before, like for the first half of this show, final 12 was still pre-merge. And I think that matters, Rob. It's not just like some irrelevant point. It's that like there's a ton of game left before you get to the actual end game of this show. So to make a move like this soon, just is just terrible. And here's why. There's five comma left in the game. And yes, we know that there's a little bit of tension right now between Devins and Wardog and even Devins and David, but still
five of the comma six.
I'm sorry, five Lesu is what I meant to say. Five Lesu left in the game. And Aurora is a floater, and now Kama has gone from the dominant tribe, the huge majority, to basically that core group, if it even is a core group after this enormous betrayal, is essentially at best equal to the Lesus, probably more fractious and worse off than they are. They have thrown away their majority. How many times have we seen this happen over the years, Rob, where the dominant tribe just turns on itself before even taking out one or two members of the other tribe? The first two votes of the merge were Joe and now Eric. Joe, we disagreed on. You thought it was a good move. I was a little bit hesitant. I thought, you know, go for one of the Lesus, but I could still see the logic in it. This is, I think, just a horrible decision this early. And even with Eric and Ron gunning for you, it doesn't have to be now. Wait for a couple votes. Wait, even just one vote. I really agree with what Victoria was saying. Let's wait one vote and
yet
then
she
do
voted
it
for Eric.
Yeah, because that's how good
on Twitter. You agree with everything she does. So which
I do
it?
Agree. No, it's both. She was correct that the vote was the wrong decision, but when she saw the numbers going there, she got on board because she's not an idiot. She doesn't want to get left behind. I think Victoria played this perfectly. We didn't see very much of her, but I think like objecting to the move was the right thing, but then getting on board is also the right thing. You can't complain about how Victoria played this. You can complain about Gavin and Julia, and that's what I'm doing.
Okay, well, that's not how I feel about things. That
what?
And hear me out, that I think that this comma six split was coming. And I think that you had the people, it really turned into like the younger comma people versus the older comma people, where it seemed like Ron, Julie and Eric were on one side of things. And then Julia, Gavin and Victoria ended up being more on the other side of things. And it looked like that they had sort of figured out, by way of Wardog, who I thought had his best episode of the season tonight. So kudos to Wardog for the conversations that he had, where he was able to suss out that what Eric and Ron were thinking of, let's take David and Devins to the end. And I think that what it looked like to me was that Ron and Eric were taking a page from like the Dominic and Wendell playbook. And it was like, hey, we found our Donathan and Laurel, so we'll go Navidi strong up until the point that we have our two people that we'll pull in and then pull the rug out from under Navidi. And so I wonder maybe if the people who flipped said, well, I'm not going to be, you know, where, you know, the Kellens and all of the people from Navidi Strong who got the rug pulled out from under them. So let's make this move now and take one of these guys out. And you have Eric, who is a physical threat, and they'll send him to the edge of extinction. But why I think that this might be a okay move for them was that they said, oh, okay, so Ron and Eric Eric are going to get the jump on us by pulling in David and Devins. We're going to get the jump on them because we're going to not pull in two. We'll pull in Kelly and Lauren and War Dog and have them as our numbers.
So I'm not debating that it was correct. It would be correct at some point to make this move. And like knowing, I mean, I actually think that Julia and Gavin were in a great position because War Dog did give them this tip, you know, this insight of his that Ron and Eric were kind of trying to keep David and Devins around. So they have this info that down the line, and it looks like at the final eight, right, that Ron and Eric might be getting squirrely. Again, there's a lot of game between the final 12 and the final eight. And I think, you know, probably everyone has their escape hatch plan for the final eight. And if you don't have your escape hatch plan, then you're behind the final eight ball. But,
there you go.
Yeah, thanks. How was that? It just came to me. It was the muse speaking through me. Ultimately, you know, again, like it's just one move or two moves too soon. It's just one vote or two votes too soon. You're leaving this entire, I don't disagree that, you know, Ron and Eric were a threat, but they weren't a threat yet. And the fact that Julia and Gavin knew that meant that they could still operate from the, you know, this perspective of working all together. And then also know, like, hey, we have to move against them before they move against us. One vote. Just wait one vote. Take out one of these lessus so that they're not this unified force. Vote out Wentworth. My God. Vote out War Dog, who's obviously, like, knows very well what's going on. The other thing that I want to say, too, is that, you know, Julia's conversation with Eric wasn't like Eric real. I mean, Eric was obviously super squirrely, and I think Julia was entirely correct, right, to get the read on him that she did. Like, good, like, kudos to her for, like, immediately sussing out that Eric was being a little bit devious. But if you're really worried about it, rather than like blow up your whole alliance and destroy the game, like force the issue a little bit, you know, like don't ruin your position in the game before you have a more, you know, apply more pressure, you know, find other ways to vote out David, you know, like really insist with Eric, like, hey, it has to be David this time. It seemed like she kind of had like a conversation, a sort of mild conversation, right? From what we saw on TV, they had sort of a mild conversation. She could see that Ron and Eric were up to something based on that. And then she was like, okay, let's destroy the whole enterprise. Like, rather than try to fix this small problem
like
this in this big alliance.
Enterprise?
But, you know, rather than try to
like
fix
when
this.
Captain Kirk did the auto destruct in Star Trek 3, the search for Spock.
Yeah. Okay. You know, rather than, you know, just try to patch up the hole in the Enterprise and find Spock with, you know, the existing Enterprise, they decided to destroy the whole thing. It doesn't make sense.
Okay. Is David Wright Spock?
I'm not with you on this metaphor.
All right. Sorry. it's hard to really be able to piece this all together because we don't know what was Julia and Eric's relationship like. We don't know where was Aurora in all of this, that she had a breakout episode tonight where we saw her ultimately win immunity and talk about how she was feeling after the Joe vote and get the extra vote from Aubrey in this episode. But who was talking to Aurora before this vote? She's one of the people that ended up voting with the people, the eight votes that went against Eric. So was that the comma side of things? Because I think I like this even more for the Julias and the Gavins and Victorias if they were able to pull Aurora back in as a number. And also, I think we have to remember that Lesu 5 is Devins is out. Devins wants nothing to do with Lesu, as we saw
like
tonight.
This week, but like who knows next week?
I don't know. That to his detriment, I thought that he was not even flirting with the Lesu side. And I think that is going to be potentially very detrimental to his game in terms of the way that he handled himself. Some great TV moments when he basically was like, War Dog was like, so I think you should come back and work with us. And Devin's like, yeah, I'd love to. That'd be great. And then War Dog is like, oh, okay, so you vote with us? Like, no, I would never vote with you guys. I hate you guys.
Yeah. Wait, I want to get to that. Wait, I'm not ready to leave behind
that you think that
Julia and Gavin made the right move here. Because, like, even if you're counting, like, there's, right, like, Ron and Julie are going to be furious at them, right?
Oh, yeah.
So who are their numbers? Like, their numbers are not War Dog, Wentworth and Lauren, like those are not like their new loyal alliance. You know, obviously David is not their new loyal alliance. Like, where is their leverage in this game now? They've totally lost their leverage.
So there's kind of three factions now, where Kama has been split in two, and then you have the Lesu group, and there's people that are sort of like flipping between either one. I don't want you to try to put words in my mouth tonight. I'm not saying that I love this move. This is definitely the right move, but I'm not willing to indict it either. I mean, it's the final 12, and this thing is going to shift a bunch of more times between now until we get to the end of the game.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, Julia and Gavin are going to be shifting in a much worse position than when they were like the dominant group on this tribe.
But they were at the bottom of the dominant group.
Why? So let's say if the Lesu Six is the dominant group, right? That's what we're agreeing on. Then the Victoria, Gavin and Julia, the younger side of that group, is still 3 out of 6, which to me doesn't necessarily mean the bottom.
Yeah. But it doesn't feel like that they have any control. And I think that what we saw with Ron and Eric in this episode was this idea of holding out the loved ones visit as just this great carrot, which was going to motivate everybody.
That was fun, right? That was really fun. I'm sorry that it didn't work out because it was a really fun idea.
It was a fun idea, but I think it's been done, and maybe it hasn't necessarily made the episodes, but I feel like that every season,
right,
that's
yes,
sort of like the carrot to keep these big alliances together where, okay, let's just make the merge. Okay, let's just make the family visit. Everybody wants to make it to the family visit. And so I have to give Julia and Gavin and Victoria credit for at least being self-interested enough to see through the ruse of let's just make it to the loved one's visit.
Yeah, but again, like you know, in Survivor, like information is power, right? So if you know like about when your enemy is going to strike, it's pretty much always ideal to strike immediately before they do, right? Like right before they do. And there's so much time before then that you have, you know, there's just like, that's not like split hairs. I'm not saying, oh, if Ron and Eric were planning on striking at the final 8, like they should have done at the final 9. I really think like 11 or 10 would have been totally good. But you just like do something to against this lesser group, you know, vote out one of them. Vote out Kelly Wentworth. That's the other thing. Not for nothing, but that Lesu group includes probably the two best players in the game with David and Kelly, and certainly the two most experienced players in the game. Like, why not vote out one of these people who is definitely more experienced at this than you?
Well, let's just play out the next couple of votes. Do you feel like that Julia and Gavin and Victoria are going to be on top of the hit list? Or do you think that these bigger threats are going to continue to gun for each other no matter what just happened at this vote?
I mean, historically, we have seen that when someone flips on their core alliance, all the remaining alliance wants to do is get revenge. And, you know, it all happens all the time, right? When this like small group comes in and they play the two sides off against each other. I would not be surprised if Julia or Gavin was the next one to go. That said, even if they're not the next to go, this doesn't increase their standing in the game. And like, does anyone like, you know, as much as I hate the talk of Survivor resumes, because I do think it motivates people to make terrible decisions really early in the game when it doesn't actually help. Right. That's the other thing. Right. So there's two possibilities here with this like Survivor resume. Either everyone credits this move to Julia and Gavin and therefore they become huge threats and everyone wants them out. It's the final 12. Like, you're not going to be able to make it to the end if you are a huge threat. Or no one credits this to them because they look like dupes of War Dog and it doesn't benefit them in any way.
It's, you know, we're so far from the end. There's so many moves that need to be made. I don't want to just reject this out of that. You know, the idea of the resume is a little hokey.
But that was just one of like the 30 other, you know, the 30 things I didn't like about it.
But do you feel like that Gavin and Julia and Victoria had the inside track to win this thing based on what you were seeing? Like, good for them for shaking things up.
I mean, it's good for us. It's good for the viewers that they shook things up.
It was
a super fun episode.
So like, I'm biased.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed it because it was as you know, I rage liked it. You know, like I was really angry at what a terrible self-destructive move it was. But it was also really good television, and it will definitely be better for the season as a whole. I don't necessarily agree with you that if you're in a great position, you should shake the boat just because, like, you're not the dominant position.
Six of that
actually is great.
Four, five, six of an alliance, and basically you know, lined up where you're probably going to get voted out seventh and eighth. That did they really risk that much here tonight?
But again, like, I don't think, like, it's not a question of waiting till the final eight. I'm saying, like, don't wait till the final eight. Don't wait to be picked off. Wait one vote, two votes. Take out one of these power players in the other group, and then flip and then make that move. When you have suddenly they become a much more crucial part of a new group. Mm-hmm. If it's Victoria, Gavin, and Julia, and you've got Wardog and Lauren, right? Then you've got five. And you're the core of that five. Now they're sort of irrelevant. Even like Wardog, Lauren, and David, right? Flip next week next week with that group, have taken out Wentworth, who is a big part of the Lesu group. But now you've really got like a core part of the new majority. Whereas now in this game, I don't think they have that at all.
This is so much time, so much changes between from vote to vote. They mix things up. They can now.
But that's like an argument against.
Fluid.
Go ahead, sorry.
They're now more fluid that they can work with the War Dogs and Kellys and Laurens if they want to. We saw people from the Lesu side that we didn't think would necessarily get back together working with each other. So that to say that we knew exactly how it was going to play out to go one way, and now everything is up in the air. The game just changes so much every 3 days. So
couldn't you make that argument like as a defense against like any bad move? Like literally what we do here is critique bad moves.
I don't know how you could sit here and say that you know 100% that this was definitely a terrible disaster of a move for these people.
No, I mean, look, I mean, you're saying like, well, who knows what the results will be? Who knows what will happen in 3 days? Anything could happen.
Yeah, we'll see.
Of course that's true. Of course that's true. But like literally any move, no matter what someone did, as long as they were still in the game, you could say, well, who knows what will happen in 3 days? The game could change a lot. There's a lot of fluidity. Someone could set fire to the camp. You could dump out the rice. You could throw your immunity aisles into the fire. Who knows? Well, let's see how it plays. In 3 days, things will be totally different.
Well, I don't know how you could sit here and say that you definitely know it's going to be a disaster.
I'm not saying that. Is it? But like,
they
literally
threw their games away, you said.
Typically what we do here is like, right, we like take things that have happened in the past on Survivor, mm-hmm. and we apply them to things that are happening right now on Survivor. And we say, well, whenever anyone has done something similar, it really ends up being very bad for them. I'm not saying I would never presume to say, I know now definitely what's going to happen. Of course, Gavin or Julia could still win. I would be shocked, but it definitely could happen. I would never presume to say like we know what is definitely going to happen. We've criticized people's strategic moves who went on to win the game. We were very critical of Tony, for example, mm-hmm. throughout his game. But I think we were wrong. We were wrong. That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, but someone can still make a bad move and win. You know, you can do something that's wrong and things can still turn out okay.
Mm-hmm. I want to look at this from the perspective of David Wright. Maybe we can find some common ground here, because I'm not sure I love this move and how David Wright played this round.
Tell me why.
David ended up being one of the people that went back with Lesu after everything from last week. And yes, he ended up being on the right side of the vote. But if things were the status quo, if things held serve, then it sounded like Ron and Eric wanted to get rid of the comma six and then move ahead with David and Devins. So David, and maybe bad job on Ron and Eric for not communicating that at least more subtly to, if not Devins, then to David, to say, hey, stick with us. Don't work to undermine us and get people all riled up so that we will ultimately. And now, again, you have to be careful with that information because it's privileged information. You don't want David and Devins to go back to the comma six and say, hey, guess what? Ron is telling everybody about how that he's going to vote you guys out and keep us. But for David and Devins, I mean, Devins ends up, he's voting with the Ron and Eric side of things, but for David. Now, he's sort of ostracized from his key ally, which was Devin. So, you know, that, you know, trust and loyalty is his brand. And now he ends up on the opposite side of things as Devin's, that they have this, both have half an immunity idol, which isn't worth bupkis until they get back on the same page. And for David, that he is probably closer to the bottom of this bigger group.
I don't know how you can say that anything he did is wrong. On, We don't know what's going to happen next week.
Be serious.
But that was your argument against what I was saying, was that we don't know. We don't know anything that happened.
All right. Should we end the show now? Are you done?
I think this might be. Well, you've just totally invalidated the whole premise. But look, I don't know. I mean, I think you can't really, critique David. He was on the right side of the vote. To me, he seems like, why should he wait around for hopefully Eric and Ron's generosity at the final eight? Ultimately, he sees playing from the bottom and sort of like, he also said, right? Like, why should David value Ron and Eric's generosity more than he's valuing Gavin, Victoria, and Julia's generosity?
It's hard to say. I just feel like that David, if War Dog was able to figure this out, War Dog was able to say that, oh, this is what's happening. Ron and Eric, and maybe he was guessing, but his guess turned out to be right. We heard Eric end up saying that. But for David, that he had a shot to the final four potentially.
But why? I mean, like, again, why at the final 12 would you ever believe someone, who was in this majority alliance, right? Who has this six, who obviously has this whole onion strategy going on, to like hope that like for their like largesse to make it to the end. It's a lot to hope for, right? And, you just like wait around for, I guess, like probably 2 weeks of game time in the hopes that they'll like eventually pick you up and that you won't. I mean, so I think, probably for someone like David, who is a floater at this point, right? He doesn't really have a strong base. Just seeing other people turn on each other is his best possible. I think that's his best possible.
Yeah,
game.
I do think that he can turn it around, but I don't know if he knew that Ron and Eric were planning on taking him and Devin's to go to the final five or final four. So that the, instinct is, okay, let me blow up this big alliance. But, had those guys communicated better, that maybe like hang in there, we got you, you're part of our plans. In the same way, we saw a number of times where Laurel and Donathan were, deciding whether or not to flip. Ultimately, they both waited too late and weren't able to pull off something but for David and Devin, that for David, all he has to do is get to four to get in that fire making challenge,
right?
And then he can get pretty close.
Yeah. I mean, again, if someone in that position came to me and said, like, we're planning on flipping at the final four, like, I wouldn't necessarily believe them. Mm-hmm. And you're also in that Laurel spot, right? Or you're in that Donathan spot where not only do you, are you basically at the mercy of the Wendell and Dominic, but you can't possibly win against them because if they're perceived as being in control,
they're pilots.
Yeah, they're the pilots. Exactly. He's the passenger. Yeah. So, I mean, that metaphor he used, like it's time for people to decide if they're pilots or passengers. I really think the final 12 is too soon. Like, you don't want to be the pilot at the final 12. Like, those people do not win the game.
I don't know. I think we'd have to go back and take a look at it. I mean, I think there's people that have made those types of moves in recent seasons, and I don't have the whole list in front of me. But I mean, the people that are just hanging in there, this is not the Middle Ages of Survivor anymore. Those people go to the finals and they get no votes.
But I think you want to turn it on like towards the end, right? Like you want to like pop like right at the end. Just like right like the final six or final seven is where you sort of want your pro, or even later is where you want your profile to kind of spike.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get really lucky.
Yeah. Can we go back to the idea of the carrot of the family visit?
Yeah. So you feel like it was old hat. I mean, it was pretty funny, like how often they brought it up, right? Like every conversation with Ron or Eric, they were mentioning the family visit.
Yeah. And I think that they probably ended up just hitting the note too hard because I think that that's probably good in those bigger conversations. But really what they failed to do was at least, and again, we don't see everything, but to sort of like, okay, then pull aside the group with, you know, Gavin and Victoria of like, hey, you know, we're really the final three. We're going to get one over on Ron and Julie. Wait till you, you know, this is the real final four, you know, the classic, you know, Boston Rob or Brian Heidick, where just having all these different multiple deals within the larger alliance. It just seemed like that Gavin and Julia, and I guess to some degree, Victoria, were just left out of those conversations about what the plan was going to be after six.
Yeah, it did really feel like very superficial. I mean, again, like I thought it was really charming. I thought it was a fun idea, but it did, you know, if all you're saying to people is family visit, family visit, family visit, like, you know, that you like, yeah, like the conversation with Eric and Julia is a really great example of where he was like, let's just get to the family visit. Like, that's where he should be saying, here's our plan for the finals. You know,
yeah,
here's
how we, if somebody's telling, yeah, if you're going in there and asking about something specific and they're like, well, let's just wait till, you know, we'll talk about it later. Then
no, Eric was terrible. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. That's just, it's not good. And he was not great in that moment.
Yeah, he was like shuffling his feet and like looking at the ground. He couldn't even look her in the eye. He was terrible. I mean, he really, you know, and good on her for trusting her read and being correct about it.
Mm-hmm. So where do we go from here, Stephen? That who is the next target in your mind?
I mean, you know, if I would not be surprised if it came back. I mean, I don't know. Would you go for Ron? Do you just take out Ron to like do the rest of the house cleaning? Like, let's say, like, I guess from whose perspective, right?
Well, okay. So what about from the Lesu people?
Yeah.
The Kelly and War Dog and Lauren.
You might want to go for Devins, honestly. Like, if Devins mm-hmm. is someone who is so adamant against working with you, you might want to just take him out. And he's like, so like clearly on the other side, you know, to the point where he was apologizing to Eric as Eric walked out. I would probably do Devins or Ron. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that those seem like two of the more likely targets. I was actually surprised that it wasn't Ron who ended up getting voted out tonight. I did feel like, I do like to ask myself before tribal council, who's going to get voted out. And I felt like, boy, we saw a lot of Eric tonight.
Yeah. I was surprised because one of the couples, right, one of the power pairs that we had sort of identified, we'd said we don't know that much about these comma people, but one, you know, one of the alliances that we do know is this Eric Gavin alliance that had been like repeatedly established.
It seemed like it, but it seemed like that the only thing that Gavin and Eric were on the same page about was we have to get rid of Aubrey.
Once yeah, Aubrey, I guess
was
so.
Gone, it was like, oh, okay, so. Nice knowing you, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. I was really surprised, you know, like Eric and Gavin were together the whole time. It was so interesting that, I mean, you know, I guess that's how it works. I mean, you'd think that would have been a deeper bond.
It was one of these real out of nowhere things where Ron and Eric are running the game. Like, what? Ron and Eric? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
What? Well, have we seen one conversation with them the whole game? Like, yeah, Ron and Eric are everywhere.
Yeah. I know you're a longstanding fan of Ron. Did this change your opinion of him?
About what? That he overplayed the family visit card?
Just in general. I know you're a big Ron fan.
I'm a big Ron fan. This was not his best episode of the season, but I thought he had some good moments early on in the episode, but we'll just blame this all on Eric.
Yeah,
the part that doesn't work. No, but I was really surprised about Ron and that they didn't go for him. And it seemed like that Gavin said to Julia, I felt like that the point it was going to change was Gavin says to Julia, like, hey, why don't we just vote out Ron? And Julia didn't seem like she loved that idea. Now, interestingly, you know, Gavin was with Eric in the post swap and then Julia was with Ron. So perhaps Julia feels more allegiance to Ron to ultimately want to keep him around over Eric. But there was something that Julia had said on Twitter this past week where she was saying that she wasn't really on board with the idea to vote out Joe at the last vote. And I do wonder if maybe the sort of like quick change from we're voting out Kelly to vote out Joe. I wonder if that there were people that felt like that they were outvoted and didn't have their voice heard in the Joe vote. And that and felt like that they had sort of been minimized in terms of how much say they have in the larger group dynamic.
Well, I will say, whenever they did a group shot, it was always Ron or Eric talking, and someone else would say something, and then Ron or Eric would respond to that and often not really, you know, give it credit. And, you know, that's always a warning sign, right? Like, you want to be the person who's saying, what do you want to do? What do you think is happening? Mm-hmm. You don't want to be the one sort of dictating strategy. You want to sort of be guiding strategy. The only other reason that abstractly I think it makes more sense to take out Ron than Eric is that presumably Julie and Ron are closer because they were together throughout on Kama. And I guess you just want to like weaken the bonds of the people who are left behind. And Eric, probably a bigger physical threat. So like probably just like a bigger target to have in the game, I guess, like abstractly. But it's like it's hard to split hairs when we've seen so little of them. Mm-hmm. And they've obviously seen so much of each other.
I was also surprised that Julie, who I thought really had a breakout episode last week, was kind of invisible in terms of what she was thinking about everything tonight.
Yeah, she looked pretty distraught, though, when Eric went home. So it seems like she's pretty firmly in that sort of Ron-Eric camp.
Yeah, also very distraught during the immunity challenge, which I thought that was a very interesting dynamic. Lauren ends up, she's like saying, I'm getting dizzy, I can't see. I feel like that, medical might have been able to get in there a little bit sooner at the point that she's talking. She's gone blind during the challenge, but she ultimately passes out, falls down. They get the medical team working on her, but it's also a live challenge going on that they can't stop. I don't recall another situation like this in Survivor history. So this was very interesting. And then to add to the intrigue, then Aurora, who we really got to see in action for the first time tonight, starts trying to make a deal with Victoria. And Julie was very annoyed about this.
Now, do you think it was crass of Aurora? I really went back and forth about it.
I do not. And here's why. I want to give Aurora the benefit of the doubt that they really do. I don't think that you had peripheral vision in that. So
right.
Lauren has fallen. People are checking on her. But Aurora doesn't know what's going on. And so she's fighting for her life in the game. She's the victim of this blindside. She's assuming if something terrible has happened, that there would be more, get the chopper ready. Come on, let's get it. Let's get more people on there. So I think that she is very focused on what she's doing, and she just can't even see or concentrate on what's going on over there.
That's my thought too. It was like, she is really fighting for her chance at Survivor. It's her only shot in the game. Her best ally was just blindsided. It's not like she's playing Monopoly. She really, she's playing Survivor. She's given so much to the game over the past 3 weeks. And now, she's got a shot to stay in it. The third competitor has just fallen out. So it's not crazy for her to start negotiating with the only other competitor that's now remaining. And yeah, she can't see, and no one's telling her to stop. They're telling them to keep going. At some point, people start telling her to stop, right? People start shouting over at her, read your room, basically.
Right. But also, I wonder if it was the other way around, because it seemed like there were people that were openly rooting for Victoria during the challenge. And Devin's did have a couple of funny moments during the challenge where Jeff talked about how the first four people, like the people who are in the best shape in the game, are all the people that are out. And then when Devin's dropped out, he's like, five now, Jeff, the top five, five physical threats. And then also it was funny when he had also she complained that nobody was cheering for her. He's like, go Aurora, go Aurora. Yeah.
Would you drop for a joke? I could see, I feel like if anyone would do it, you would do it.
That would I fall down because I heard a joke or fall down because it would be funny?
It would be funny. Like David said, I hope you didn't just do that just for the joke.
I do regret that during the peanut butter and chocolate that I didn't do some strip sort of off. Wacky fall into the ocean. Whoa! Would have been a good button on that clip, but that's a regret for another time.
That's good. So let's talk about Devin's. Let's talk about this conversation between Devin's and War Dog, because I think it really gets to the heart of so much of contemporary Survivor. You have Devin saying, you guys just voted for me twice. You know, you have actually voted me out of the game, and now you want me to work with you. And Wardog is saying, yeah, that happened, and that's the past. And now we're in the present. Like, stop thinking about the past. Did you have, like, was there one person who you sided with more here?
I feel like that I was more with Wardog. I feel like that, you know, it did feel was fun for TV to have Devin say, like, basically give Devin's the classic, oh, hell no.
Oh, hell no.
But but I just say what Wardog was saying, like, okay, that happened. Okay, so what? Who cares? Let's go. And Wardog, I think, was right. I thought Wardog had his best night tonight.
Rob, you just edited in that "oh hell no" clip. That was not what she said in response to that. To
I
that
think she
beat.
Did
that
at
was,
one point say it.
Yeah, she did. I mean, it was a different thing. It was a different "oh hell." It was a different negative comment. But so here's the thing. Like, ultimately, I do feel like Devin's has a point that he should not trust Kama, but he should not. I mean, you know, the whole idea of, you know, this vote is completely divorced from all past votes, I just don't think that's realistic. Like, you have to have this trust to move forward in Survivor. I think where Devin's went wrong was in telling Wardog that he didn't trust him.
Yeah. I would love to, you know, also get into Devin's and David Wright in this episode where the
same argument,
am I drunk or are you drunk conversation. Yeah. And what we haven't seen from Devin's is, you know, what is your way forward with this group? Like, where is your in? And we don't know. Did Ron or Julie or Eric sort of make a promise to Devin's that the other people just weren't seeing?
I mean, we have to assume, right? You got to assume that, like, he wasn't just like going off of, you know, hope and duct tape. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's actually crazy of him. Like, obviously we know that the Less Who Six falls apart, but if you're Devin's and you think that the Less Who Six has their act together, which we know they don't, it's not crazy to try to be the last the last Less Who standing. Did I say Comma Six? Anyway, whatever, you know who I'm talking about. Okay. It's not crazy to try to be the last comma standing. Like, it's actually like historically, like, you, a lot of people who are sort of
you're the Danny Boatwright.
Right. And then they use you for the flip. And then, you know, then you kind of make your way to the finals and they're all so mad at each other that they vote for you because you're the last one standing from the, you know, your lesser tribe.
Well, it would be a very unique situation because then he would sort of be aiding and abetting the other group. Like, it works out good when you are the Danny Boatwright and you're the last person left from your group that the other group did not pick off and you stayed loyal to your group, that Rick Devin's in that scenario could get to the end but would not get any votes from the Less Who people after he helped decimate his former tribe.
That's probably true. I mean, although, you know, again, the counter argument that they did literally vote him out of the game, they eliminated him, so it's like at that point you can't really count on someone to be loyal to you after you vote them out and you know, crush their dreams. Yeah, I mean, I don't blame him for being skeptical, but I do think there was a different path here where he sort of basically, you know, goes where the wind blows, right? Like, kind of like basically does what David is doing. And I think you're right that, you know, David is maybe the better model here.
So David, when Devin says, hey, could I get the other half of that idol back? David says, well, no, I think I'm going to hold on to it. What did you think of that from David Wright?
That was great. I love that moment. And he was like, if it's okay, I think, right? He even like made it sort of into like a request.
I did kind of like that too, just because, hey, we're not on the same page. So I am going to hold on to this. Like,
why would I give you? Yeah, this is my half of the idol. Like, why should I give this to you when you might use it against me?
Yeah, until we're back on good terms. And I kind of do feel like that David and Devin's will ultimately reunite like the two halves of the idol and they will get back on the same page. Do you agree with that?
Oh yeah. But this is like the fantasy situation for whoever came up with this twist, right? Is that someone shares it with someone, the other person wants it back, and then he can't, and they have to like figure out how to work, this like odd couple has to figure out how to work together for the sake of the baby idol.
Right. We need King Solomon to come in and ultimately help decide the fate of this idol. Well, actually, now Aurora is a divorce attorney, and I think she is probably used to these type of custody issues. Maybe she could be the person to bridge the gap between them.
Like, if you give me two votes, I'll give you this idol half.
Mm-hmm.
Could be.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Okay. Stephen, that I just want to go back to this vote. You know, I don't feel like that these people that flipped tonight have done in their games. I also don't feel like they've won the game tonight. That's really where I just want to be clear about my opinion on all of this.
But that was very unclear.
It's very hard to say that they've either won the game or lost the game tonight based on this move.
Yeah, I think, I mean,
they've made themselves more important to the game because of this.
But I don't think you want to be more important at the final 12. You know, I think that's like where you kind of want to be, the bottom half of the top alliance. And I hear you. I mean, obviously, you know where I stand. Yeah, so I didn't think it was a good move.
Intrigued. So who do you give the fishy to then tonight?
Wardog. My God. Oh, here's a question I have for you. I don't think Wardog even thought his plan was going to be that good. I don't think even Wardog expected it to go like that.
I think that he probably was surprised himself that Julia was able to do it. So good on Wardog for going. You know, he had a bad night of pitching to Devins, but then he came in and talked to, I think we saw him talking with Julia. Was it with Gavin also or with Victoria?
It was with both of them.
Yeah. And so,
I'm sorry. It was with Gavin. I'm sorry. We didn't say him with Victoria.
Yeah. So he said, hey, you need a vote. You need a soldier. Hey, I'm your guy. And ultimately it ends up, you know, we never saw then Julia and Gavin actually back on screen talking with any of them. So I was wondering if maybe the vote wasn't going to ultimately go through. I kind of thought the way it was going to go down that I thought it would be Eric, but I thought that Kelly was going to play her idol and it was going to be Eric and that the Julia and Gavin and Victoria were going to stick with Kama.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I thought it was going to be that he was going to be idled out. Really fun editing, by the way, right? Where they kind of cut back and forth with Gavin and Julia with Wardog in that conversation.
Yeah. Also, the interesting edit on the Lauren falling down in the challenge, where we got to see sort of like the Lauren POV of blurry vision.
The blur, yeah.
Blurry vision.
Maybe that was just a mistake and they left it there.
You think so? That was the camera person that was going to go, talk to them.
But I really think Wardog, like all he wants, like he said, like any vote that's not for David or Devins tonight is a vote against the younger part of the commas. I think all Wardog was trying to do was put the vote on David or Devins to save his little trio. And it really, you know, exceeded his expectations, but good on him for like correctly sussing out what was really happening on the comma tribe more than the comma tribe itself could do.
Okay. And for Aurora, do you feel like that with now an immunity win, an extra vote, could she have a path moving forward, Stephen?
Yeah, I think she's in a good spot. Like, you know, she's got this extra vote.
Who does she
probably
go with?
No, but she can go anywhere she wants. Like she, that's like the nice thing. Like no one, right? I mean, she probably goes with Wentworth, right? It seemed like when Wardog, Wentworth, and Lauren were talking, Wardog was like, I'm not sure where Aurora stands. And both Wentworth and Lauren sort of responded very authoritatively that they knew that Aurora was the one who was left out of the previous vote.
Does it change anything for you if Aurora ends up being more loyal with the younger comma group? Again, Julia was there with Aurora on the tribe with Joe and Ron. If she is somehow friendly with Victoria and Gavin, and now there's four of the comma with it's really Julie and Ron are now the odd commas out.
Yeah, that would, I mean, if that was a real lock, I mean, doing it as four, I think as like, I mean, you're still leaving, you know, four strong Lesu and a fifth Lesu. I mean, again, like, I just think one vote, like one vote out David, vote out Wentworth. Either
especially
of them,
especially if you Julia know, is like, hey, we didn't want to vote out Joe, that was all Ron, he was pushing get rid of Joe, and Eric too, they both were, they couldn't beat him in the challenges, they wanted him out so bad.
Yeah Look, I mean, you know, it's always the case that we see clusters of people and they probably don't even see the same from the perspective of the contestants. The groupings that we see probably aren't even like representative of what actually makes it to TV.
Yeah. And if that's the case, then you sort of have like four of the old comma and then Ron and Julie with Devin sort of attached to them. David Wright is sort of like his own thing. And then Kelly and Lauren and Wardog are a thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, look,
it's messy. I like it.
No, it's definitely great. It's great TV. There's no question. I do think it was bad gameplay. I can't go back on that now. I've really dug in.
Boring games. That's how you play, and it's what you like.
As a viewer, I love chaos. As a contestant, you do want boredom. You want the boredom.
How was this different from when you voted out Kelly Wigglesworth?
Well, Kelly Wigglesworth was against me. She was trying to target me, like with Joe. Like, how do you not, vote that person? You're voting people out who are actively targeting you.
Okay. All right. So we're going to get to your questions here tonight. Hashtag RHAP.
Oh, also, yes. That was the final 10. Again, final 12. Big difference. I was saying they should wait to the final 11. I was saying final 11. That's a big difference.
Okay. All right. So, of course, look, there's no insurance that anybody is going to get that far into the game, to the final 10 even. But you can be saving a lot of money on your car insurance with our friends over at AIS. The auto insurance specialist, Stephen Fishback, and they have the smart quote technology, the kind that you start off every episode of Paraphrase Podcast with, looking at the smart quote to open up a book. No, not that smart quote. The smart quote technology that tells you whether there is a better deal out there, just like the comma six, that the people on the bottom were out there shopping for a better deal. That could be you with your car insurance. And Stephen Fishback will even say you made the right move when you switch to a carrier that is going to get you the same or better coverage even at a lower rate, saving you hundreds of dollars, and you then could pay for a family visit of your own from anywhere in the country, fly them in to see you anytime, anywhere, when you're saving money on your car insurance.
That sounds amazing. That sounds great.
sounds
like a really good deal.
Yeah, in just a couple of minutes, go ahead and put in all of your information. Go to AISinsurance.com/Rob and see if there is a better deal out there waiting for you. You could also call up 1-800-777-4AIS. Don't make your next insurance payment until you check your rates with AIS. Go to AISinsurance.com/Rob. The easiest thing you'll do today, and you could be saving a lot of money. All right, Stephen, let's take some of these questions from the wonderful listeners of Rob Has a Podcast. Okay, Stephen, what does Jonah have to say?
All right. Jonah Dwyer wants to know, if Julia, Gavin, and Victoria were going to flip, isn't the better move to just vote out David or Devins?
Well, then you still leave the people you are flipping against. Then you're leaving three people mad at you still in the game. Ideally, when you flip against people, you want to take one of them out so that there are less people to come back and get you on the next vote.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is, David is voting with them. Devins is voting. Devins doesn't really have any real place to go right now. So I think when you're going to flip, you want to like take out the power brokers of the people who against whom you're flipping.
Yeah.
I do still think, as you know, that there's probably a way for them to get David or Devins out by pushing back a little bit more with Ron and Eric and kind of making it really clear, convince Ron and Eric to get rid of David. Like say like, hey, David just came up to me and told me to vote you out. I think there's ways that they could have gotten David out and therefore sort of hamstrung this plan of Ron and Eric's without actually turning on their alliance.
Okay. Let's take another question. This is from Brock. Can Rick Devins recover from this? This was a huge misstep on his part. Steven, I was starting to buy into Rick could be the winner of the season after he came back. But I'm not feeling as great about Rick after this episode this week.
Can Rick Devins recover from this? Rick Devins can recover from being voted out of the game. He can recover from this.
Yeah. But game-wise, what's his path now?
Yeah, I don't know. I really think he would have to mend some fences. I mean, that said, in terms of like jury favorability, being on that side of Eric, right before Eric went down, not a terrible place to be if he can now sort of flip back. I'm never a fan of the person who's flipping back and forth.
Steven,
so it's not great.
Just,
it's not great.
Don't forget, Aurora has that extra vote if she's voting with the comma people. That's another number.
Yeah, that's true. That's
true. Though that, and I thought of it because that I said, Aubrey got the extra vote. She'll definitely give it back to Devins, who gave her the extra vote.
I don't know. I don't think there's like a quid pro quo there. You know, Aurora was her ally, right? For this, like, Aurora was the
quid pro quo when somebody gives you an advantage.
Yeah, you know, this is one of the rules of survivor power. You know, you don't count on anyone owing you anything.
Well, let me just say here for the record, I have a quid pro quo. Somebody gives me an advantage in the game, I find one, I'm giving it back to them.
Yeah, I think me too. Right. Yeah, if someone gives me an advantage, and yeah, okay. But I don't think that's true. Well, you know, Aurora was there for Aubrey much right for weeks on end, right? They were allies.
I mean, I think like 9 days, but
yeah, okay, that's the 9 days on end. It's a long 9 days, you know,
3 weeks not for us.
Yeah, not a lot to do out there on Survivor. You get real bored, so yeah. Time kind of expands.
Okay, right, Steven, should the castaways on the edge of extinction search for hidden advantage clues or just look for giant advantage centered props set up in the clearings around the island? That's from Zach. What do you think?
That's pretty good. Yeah. Why look for the clue when you can just look for the giant obstacle course?
Mm-hmm. I wonder if, you know, just in terms of like inside baseball, if maybe they got, you know, took Aubrey to maybe a part of the island that was not necessarily accessible to everybody else.
Yeah, probably so. I'm assuming that it was not,
because you would think that, you know, Joe Anglum would have scoured this entire island by now.
Right. Notice the ropes course. Yeah, I think my guess too is that it was probably something like that. All right. Paige wants to know. Oh, we didn't really talk about the edge of extinction thing.
Yeah. What do you want to talk about?
I don't know. I guess there's not really much to talk about.
Yeah. Aubrey got an advantage, and then she sent one to Aurora.
How do you feel about these? Like, there's something that's just like feels kind of off to me about like magic advantages appearing in people's baskets or bags. What's your perspective?
Yeah, I don't love it. And I feel like I've enjoyed the Edge of Extinction stuff, but I don't really like that they are able to sort of like go online shopping and send gifts to their friends from the Edge of Extinction. I kind of feel like that we did the one thing one time that it's going to be sort of, I think, too much to every week. The people on the Edge of Extinction get to send an advantage into the game.
Yeah, I agree. And part of what I thought was so compelling about the premise of Edge of Extinction was people like really pushed to their limits. And now it just seems like it's like a treasure hunt.
Mm-hmm. So I think that they could scale that back. More fighting and less giving of advantages to the players in the game.
Yeah,
that's what I would like.
All right. Paige wants to know, where do you guys see the game going from here? It seems like it is going to be a giant cluster next week and for the rest of the season with so many names getting thrown out. Thoughts?
Yeah. It's going to be a mess, and that's fun. I mean, to speak to your point from earlier in terms of, you know, the game was, you know, the merge has come earlier and earlier in the season, that this has been one of my complaints about Survivor over the last few years, where we spend weeks and weeks of time on votes like 12 and 11 and 10. And then when we get down to what the real nitty gritty is of, you know, 6 and 5, we really have that in a very compressed time frame. We don't even have a vote at 4 really because of the fire making challenge. So the votes that are really where it comes down to brass tacks, we sort of like speed through that so quick. And now we're spending a lot of time in the weeds in these votes where there's so many people, and I can understand why production might want that, because that you can really have things be very unpredictable. There's so many different people that you could talk to and see and you know, put it from all these different perspectives. But in terms of where the game is really won and lost, we sort of, you know, speed through that, and it is harder to sort of give an analysis on these moves here that take place at the final 12.
Yeah, and especially because so many of the decisions may be just kind of like last minute decisions. I mean, my experience when it was like 13 people or 12 people, it was like the wheel spun all day. And then like wherever it happened to stop right before tribal council was the person who was voted out. And then you would, you know, you could afterwards construct or like a story about why it had to be that person. But it really was somewhat random. And I agree, like this final 6, the final 5, like the game is, it just feels so much more intense in those votes. And like it's so more sped up, and like every interaction you have, everything that happens is so crucial. And you're really trying to like outwit the few players who are left against you. I guess I just agree with you.
And I might fall off my chair. And I understand you want to have an 18 person cast, but I feel like that we could have a couple of, episodes where we vote two people off during the pre-merge and sort of like, come into a merge at like, even like an 11 person merge. But I understand that they want to have, well, what do they have? A final three and a 10 person jury? I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. Well, now it's a final three and a 13-person jury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how many people raise the flag. Do you think that anybody else will raise the flag this season?
I do not. Like, I don't even think... I can't imagine who else in the game would raise the flag, and especially when they're decently... I mean, I guess there's, like, still a solid, 2 weeks and change of gameplay left.
Yeah, I think it was day 22 at Tribal Council.
Yeah. So that's a long time to just be sitting there starving and doing nothing. But I just can't imagine anyone quitting. Can you?
I don't think so. Unless somebody ends up with some sort of an injury, like perhaps Lauren, I think might be the person on the board right now, based on that she has been weak. She talked about how the food makes her sick, that she passed out in the challenge. I just was happy that, she didn't get to go on that Chinese food reward. I said, well, that's just more rice. That's more problems for her.
Yeah. A lot of calories in Chinese food, though.
That's good.
That made me hungry. Chinese food is a reward in real life.
That was a first for Survivor.
That is a first. I think
the problem with Chinese food on Survivor is that then once you win the reward, 30 minutes later, you're hungry again.
Yeah.
So not
True.
Ideal.
True. Not ideal. Not ideal. Not ideal. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Steven, what about Kieran?
Kieran wants to know, would it have made more sense to take out Ron since he seems to be the ringleader on Kama?
Well, not to take so much from social media, but that I in another one of Julia's tweets, I saw she did say about how that physical threats were a factor of voting people out in terms of sending people to extinction. And now I think that there is a thought of we don't want Joe to come back and win the game. So who could we put on extinction that will beat Joe?
Right. And in general, you probably want to wear these people down in case. I mean, there's two sort of angles, right? Like one is who do I not want to compete against if I end up on extinction? Right. But also like, who do I kind of like want to get worn down just by by the elements? Who do I sort of, I mean, it's interesting. I really don't love these castaways tweeting out.
I don't
all
think
the
they should. I prefer it when they don't give it, like, let us guess and be wrong.
Yeah, I like to be wrong. I mean, I'm real good at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but I do think that that's part of the thought process here.
Yeah. That makes sense. That does make sense. I wish we saw more of that. I would like to see how, because like that's the big twist for this season, mm-hmm. is the edge of extinction. Like, I want to see how that factors into the strategy. I mean, we saw a little bit about it with like the right on Blood versus Water. We were like, well, that his loved one's still in the game, and you mm-hmm. know that calculation was really present in everyone's thoughts, and I'm sure it's present in these players' thoughts too.
So Edric wants to know, weren't Eric and Gavin shown to have a day one pact? How does this move make sense for Gavin? Yeah, they had a day one pact to vote out Aubrey. That was it. Take Aubrey out. And then once Aubrey is gone, that was the original make it to the family visit. Once Aubrey is gone, then all bets are off.
Aubrey's like the hero of Edge of Extinction, isn't she? She's just like killing it over there.
Yeah. So let me parse this opinion on this. I feel like that for Gavin, this move was the worst out of the group. I feel like that for Julia, it was better. I feel like that Julia has more options to go, but I feel like that a lot of Gavin's roads involved Eric.
Yeah, it certainly seemed that way to us. I do agree that for him to take out one of his best allies was probably not, or what seemed to be one of his best allies was probably not a great move. I mean, the other thing is, again, like why not? Like, if you're Gavin and you think that Ron and Eric are planning something, why not be like, hey, I want to get in on this thing, you know, like let me in on this, on this hustle.
Yeah.
There's other ways to play the information than like blowing up the alliance.
Right.
Because or the Enterprise.
I feel like the Julia still has ties potentially to Aurora. It's potentially to Julie. There could be a women's thing. So I think she has like more out still, but for Gavin, I'm not necessarily sure where he goes from here.
Yeah,
other than Victoria.
I mean, and Victoria's right about everything, so it's a great person to be with.
Yes,
isn't she great? Like she's
fun.
I think she's such a strong player. You know, she did the Aubrey blindside perfectly. Mm-hmm. So she's clearly open to making moves and here she was like, let's just wait one vote. I think the correct decision. But then when the votes were gone, you know, she was right there on board with voting with the majority.
Nothing to complain about, but I don't know. Like, it's like I get so carried away.
I mean, when you're like team these two people who are blowing up the whole game here.
I thought it was better for Julia than for Gavin.
Yeah. But I think, you know, Victoria, best of all.
Okay. Yeah. Pineapple Boy 27. So how do you feel about Extinction Island having direct effect on the game going on through those gifted advantages? We don't like it.
Not a fan. I don't love it. I mean, I see why they did it, because like you're not totally out of the game. You're still in it. But I don't love it. I don't love things just showing up in someone. It's like it doesn't, you know, the players.
Like the Easter Bunny.
I think my biggest frustration with the idea of Extinction Island overall is the fact that the game that's happening on the island, which is the game of Survivor, somehow now becomes less crucial and less important, right? So Aurora doesn't have to go scrambling through the woods. She doesn't have to leave camp behind. She doesn't have to sacrifice anything in order to find this advantage, right? There was no trade-off for her. Just showed up in her basket one day.
Yeah, and ideally, what you want to do is not try to get people voted out, because if you get people voted out in Survivor,
no advantages now, for you,
then they'll be mad at you and they won't send you advantages. So ideally, what you should do is be nice to everybody and don't try to get them voted out.
Yeah, don't try to vote against anyone. Just hope. Yeah, that's it.
It's ideal. Okay.
I think Devin's is playing the perfect strategy.
Nice, pissing some people off. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Not people who are going home.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Ian, has there ever been a puppet master with less control of his puppets than Geppetto? Ron Clark said he was the puppet master. Come on, Ron. He had some of his puppets doing the right thing.
Yeah.
It was really Eric that screwed everything up.
I don't think you ever want to call yourself the puppet master.
Ideally not. And for all we know, every Survivor calls themselves the puppet master, but when they show it, it's usually not a good sign.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Did you ever call yourself the puppet master?
I think that I said probably something similar, but I don't know if I ever used that exact terminology.
The Dragon Slayer?
No. I think I said I was like running the game. I don't think I said puppet master.
The game master.
Reality game master. Yeah. Okay. Steven, what about TJ?
All right. TJ wants to know, how come from the players' eyes, this tribal council was the most cut and dry all season, but though in our eyes turned out to be anything but?
Where's TJ getting this from, Steven?
What do you mean?
That this was the most cut and dry tribal council. Was that said?
I don't know. Maybe someone said that, but I don't know. I mean, one thing we didn't talk about, which I think we should talk about, was how well the people who were in on this blindside played that tribal council. I mean, they really played it well, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. Don't you think? I mean, like, once again, Victoria, masterful. You know, she has this whole speech about how, like, you don't want to take your shot and then shoot yourself in the foot, and she's not gonna like shoot herself, and she's not gonna, you know, this whole speech basically like proclaiming loyalty to her existing alliance. You know, I thought David did really well too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Nobody really like blew me away at that tribal council.
Well, clearly, you know, I was.
What about 44 Extinction Drive on their resume?
Did you not have an address for your home
on my resume?
No, just like, I don't know, like we called ours like 321 Potash Road in Cambodia or wherever it was, or maybe
that,
it was like
that was the
home
address of the Ponderosa.
No, that was just on the address of our camp. We call it like, I think it was like 420, knowing who I was playing with, but like 420 Potash Road.
So that's what you guys called your camp? That was the address of if I wanted to send a letter to the Bayan tribe?
Yeah.
No, we didn't.
No. This was in Tokenshin. Sorry.
Okay, no, we didn't have that anywhere I played.
Yeah, maybe you should have thought about addresses.
I guess so. If I play again, I will give an address.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll call it Fishback Place. Oh,
that's so nice. Okay. That's so thoughtful.
Yes. Okay. All right. Steven, where does Lauren's reaction rank on the list of near medical misses on the show? Do we have a list of that?
I mean, it's definitely less bad than Russell Swan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That wasn't a near miss, though.
That was a hit.
That was a hit on the battleship for Russell Swan. All right. Scott, do we have any other questions? James wants to know, was this a smart move for Julia to go and test Eric to see if he would defend against the David Devins vote off? Does this give her the fishy touch? It does not. Reverse fishy, maybe.
Yeah. I was close on the rotten fishy. And then I thought, you know what? These are nice people. They're both fans. Like, I don't want to give them a rotten fishy. I like them. I like both. Wait, Julia
you
and
almost
Gavin.
Broke out the rotten fishy tonight.
I know. Yeah. It was that dire.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I credit to Julia for gauging Eric and realizing that Wardog was right about her. About him. I just think that the move that she took from that was not the right one. Okay. All right. Tara wants to know, should Devins give his half idol to David in an attempt to make amends and get on the right side of the vote next week?
I don't know. If that's the right move.
Yeah. I like the idea of them having to come together for the sake of the idol. I think it's a really interesting, relationship.
Yeah. I think that they will. I really do. I think that they'll end up getting back on the right side of things. Brett Barakoff wants to know, do we have any idea how the jury works this season? Like if Eric doesn't go to extinction, would he be on it? If someone like Aubrey left the edge of extinction, would she be on it? Steven, this was something I talked about on the podcast during the week this week. So, or this past week, if somebody raises the mast, say Aubrey raises the mast, now she would no longer be on the jury, right?
I think that's really interesting because Aubrey, yeah, I don't know. That's a really good question.
Aubrey's the wrong example because she was we saw that two right. people that were pre-merge. But let's say Joe Anglum says, I've had enough. I can't cut it out here. I'm not as young as I used to.
I think if you quit, you're off the jury. You're walking out of the game. I think so.
Because I don't think they're going to bring people in from the Ponderosa as well.
Yeah. Someone tweeted, Taryn tweeted that the whole Edge of Extinction idea was just to save money on Ponderosa.
Yeah. Taryn Armstrong?
Yeah.
It's his birthday today.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to Taryn.
Great tweet and happy birthday.
Okay. All right. Barack wants to know, could Rick's reaction have been different if someone other than the War Dog had been the one to try to mend fences with him? Could Lauren or Kelly have gotten the job done, or was his mind 100% made up already?
It did seem like he was most annoyed at the War Dog barking at him. He kept on talking about the war, War Dogging and barking. So it did seem, and War Dog comes in pretty strong, right? So it did seem like,
but I don't think he was, I didn't think he was barking.
No, but those weren't my words. Those were Rick Devins' words.
That's why I feel like that Rick was probably, even if somebody has insulted you twice and voted you out, I feel like that, he's still a player in the game. I think that you shouldn't be, closing that door in his face.
Right. Oh, no. Yeah. But I mean, I do think it's possible that someone with a lighter. I mean, on the other hand, we saw David make the same pitch to him and he was not having it. So you couldn't ask for a lighter, friendlier touch than.
Yes. And my biggest unanswered question still from last week goes back to the Devins versus Wentworth of it all, where Wentworth said about Devins last week, he was the person that she least wanted to come back to the game. She took exception to that, seemingly on Twitter, that she felt like that was not how she felt about Devins coming back into the game. Devins gave an interview to Josh and said he wanted to work with the Lesu people, but Wentworth wasn't having it. And then this week we saw a lot of animosity from Devins towards the original Lesu side of things, but was that all after the events of the last episode?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it did. It really. I mean, they did try to vote for him twice. They did try to they eliminated him once.
I mean,
yeah, they tried twice, and one time they succeeded.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Shane Powers in the chat says, whatever half an idol is, I'm not sharing it with either of you. Okay. All right. Let's see. Any other questions? What about CBBUS2?
CBBUS2 says, what if the players had the option to share rewards with Edge of Extinction players? Or if the reward was to spend time with someone from Extinction? Could provide for some interesting scenarios.
What are you going to do with, I want to spend time with Aubrey. That's my reward today. I just want to make it to the Edge of Extinction visit.
No, but then you can like, you know, you get some jury.
I want to share my Chinese food with Joe.
Yeah, I think that actually would be such a huge advantage that I don't think it would be fair. It would be like being able to visit the jury villa and like chat with those people and be like, hey, guys, like, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. Like, let me tell you what's really happening in the game and how I was the one who secretly tried to save all of you.
Yeah. All right. Thomas wants to know, would Aurora have been an easy vote after her drama at the challenge? I was kind of thinking that Aurora, if she didn't win the immunity challenge, might have been voted off tonight.
I think maybe it would have been like a sort of simple, like, let's just like, you know, she was
like, can you believe she that while Lauren was getting medical attention?
Yeah. Although Ron went right over to Aurora and, you know, tried to bring her in. I mean, if I'm Ron and I am less threatened by Aurora than I am by, you know, Kelly.
Yeah. No, I thought that the way that they were kept showing people being mad at Aurora during that challenge, I thought that there was a chance she was going to potentially be voted out tonight.
I thought so too. I thought that was setting up like, we get back from camp and everyone's like, she crossed the line. We don't play that way here.
Yeah. It's not how we do it in Fiji.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about Will?
Will Donald wants to know, are you surprised how quickly David and Kelly have been completely at each other's throats one day and then completely together the next? Seems to be a recurring theme since day one of this season. Or was Rick Devens the driving force behind the Kelly Wentworth hate?
Yeah, I mean, really, Wentworth and David are the Sam and Diane of a new generation of the on again, off again alliance with David and Kelly Wentworth.
I love it. That's like that's the best part is like they really both wanted each other out. They're stuck with each other and they're good enough players to recognize that they're stuck with each other and to vote together when it makes sense.
I think that's I want it to work all the way to the end.
I would love that. I think like a David and Kelly in the final two would be such a gift. It also would be like such a like an indictment, a rebuke for these people who have let them get so far. What are you doing? Why do you not vote them out? Okay. Anyway.
Okay. Then Lorenzo says, it seems like Victoria, Gavin, and Julia are with Lesu on a more temporary basis. Do we think that Aurora has completely jumped ship or is she still part of that voting block? Look, Aurora is a free agent. She said, I'm going to go wherever the numbers are.
I think that's right. And that makes sense for her. And I think that, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
If Aurora gets to the end, just going where the numbers are, but can she win?
Probably not.
I don't know, but she's got like strong allies in the jury. If you've got Joe and Aurora and Aubrey over there who like love you and are talking about how great you are.
Right. But I mean, it really just depends on the journey there where, you know, if Aurora can, and we talked about this so much last season of, you know, it's really a resume is the wrong word. It's really about a story. So if Aurora says, hey, I went through this whole pre-merge and I had Joe Anglin by my side and that kept me safe and that safety net got ripped away from me at the first vote of the merge. Joe was gone and I was the Arya Stark out there on my own. I was doing it for Joe and I went on and I won 5 immunity challenges. I was the comp beast that Joe would have been if he would have been there in the game. And so nobody had me as part of their plans, but here I am in the final three. So, you know, it's a story as opposed to like, well, I found this advantage and I voted out. I made this move at final 12. But incoherently, I made this move at 9. And so if you can like a narrative.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, the whole point of the story versus resume thing was that you shouldn't make dumb big moves that don't really serve you strategically. But that's neither here nor there. One thing I do want to talk about.
It's the start of a story for those people.
Right.
That like we were on the bottom of comma and then we completely flipped the whole game on our head and then worked with, you know.
Right. Okay. That's a fair point. That's a good point. I do think though that it will be interesting to see how the Edge of Extinction element ends up deeply affecting the jury. Because, right, like, I mean, you know, the jury is not just abstractly weighing the feats of the contestants in the final three. It's its own little, like, social microcosm of you know, spite and loathing. Mm-hmm. And I think that the fact that you have people who were there at the pre-merge, you know, really affecting the whole tenor of this experience is going to really end up having a big impact on who wins.
Yep. We'll see. It's a whole different animal. All right. Last couple of questions. Jazz says, where would you rank David's pilots and passengers analogy so far? Is it the best of 2019? Wow. We do have one of our listeners, I believe Preston, who is tracking all of the tribal council analogies.
Oh, really? That's a great idea. Oh, I love
so
that.
We will hear all the things that tribal council and the game is like at the end of the season or at the end of the year. But, do you agree with David Wright? Is this game all about pilots and passengers?
I think it's more about the story. I agree with you. I think, like, if you can, I think that if you can say, like, I was, you know, here's why my journey makes sense, that's more important than necessarily like captaining a vote. I mean, you know, like I said about, you know, Kelly in Cambodia, she never captained a single vote, but I think she could have won. I mean, not against Jeremy, but against anybody else, because like she hung in there when everyone was against her.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What does the original tryhard have to say?
The original tryhard says, Stephen Fishback is triggered. Does he see himself as Eric? Why is he so pissed? I'm neither triggered nor pissed. You know, this pisses me off. No, I'm triggered now. Now, people can debate things and have different opinions and have like passionately debate things and not have like any like animosity or anger behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So Stephen is not triggered, everybody. Yeah. Okay. And he does not see himself as the Eric.
I mean, I'd love to be the Eric. That would be great for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. All right. J-Dak says, how bad does the flip look for Devins now? He spit in the face of Lesu and then got blindsided by them.
Yeah, it doesn't look great.
Does not look great. Yeah. I mean, that he basically, he put all his eggs in the comma basket and then the comma basket, busted. So not great. You want to be on the right side of the numbers after you make a flip. Okay. All right. Steven, let's talk about what else you have going on here.
Oh, look at this great picture of Nathan's
podcast.
Tell
us about who this gentleman is.
All right. So this is Nathan Englander, and he's actually a writing teacher of mine and also probably one of like the best novelists out there, who just wrote this book called Kaddish.com. It's a really fun book. The premise is this, guy, his father dies, and according to ancient Jewish law, he has to say the Kaddish every day for, I don't know, many months, 10 months, 11 months, I don't know. And so he goes to a website basically to hire someone to say the Kaddish for him. But then he comes to the realization that maybe he's like jeopardized his father's soul. He outsourced it. Now he has to like get the rights back. It's a really funny book. Most importantly, it's short. You can read it in like basically a single sitting. I think it's around 200 pages and hilarious. You don't have to know anything about Orthodox Jewish belief to read it. And Nathan is an absolute genius, and it was a real pleasure to interview him for Paraphrase. It's like hard to follow his train of thought. He's like so smart. He's just like pulling strings together, all at once. But, there's so many pearls of insight there.
Okay. So check that out at paraphrasepodcast.com. Steven, I also, heard that you were on the Jacob Derwin, podcast recently.
Yeah, it's the I'm Trying podcast.
I got a message from the Jacob Derwin, and he said, can you please promote that? He said that my podcast is all about people who have suffered incredible failure, and my guest is Stephen Fishback. Could you please get the word out? I said, I would love nothing more.
Yeah, it's like I'm talking about incredible failure. Fishback. In fact, I think the thing I fail, like I don't know if I was a great guest, because I really like, I wanted to be a good guest so bad, but I felt like I was failing at being a great guest, but I was trying. I was trying to be a good guest. And it was great. It's a great premise. Like, he and his co-host are super funny. They made it really easy. It was really interesting. It was interesting. Like, you know, I went in expecting to really just talk about Survivor stuff and all of like the ways I've failed at that, which are numerous. But they really tried to get, you know, into some more personal things. And I'm so used to like, you know, it's like you almost like talk exclusively about Survivors that you don't talk about, like you, mm-hmm. you get like to hide some of like the most intimate personal stuff. And they dug in there.
They dug in there. Okay. I'm Trying podcast. You can find it on the Apple Podcast Store, wherever you get your podcast with Jacob Derwin. Elsewhere, we have a Thursday morning update with Taryn. Hopefully he will not party too hard for his birthday, won't overdo it on the vanilla or the plain yogurt. And he will be up and at him at 11 a.m. Eastern to get ready for another Big Brother Canada eviction this week. Find out who's going to go out on Sam's HOH in our live eviction recap on a Thursday night on Big Brother Canada 7. And then the Brazilian dragon, Abby Maria Gomes, is going to be my guest. I'm going to go talk to her in person, Stephen.
Gomes?
What do you pronounce it? Gomez?
I believe it's Gomez.
Okay. We'll find out from Abby Maria herself as we go through and we'll ask her what she thinks about Steven and everything else.
No. That's a subject you can avoid.
Survivor at robs@website.com if you have any questions for Abby Maria. And then, Brent is going to be on the B&B this week. Mm. So it's going to be a triple B with Brent Walgamott on the RHAP B&B. So be on look out for that. And then we will find out, why did Eric lose? How many of David Bloomberg's rules did Eric break tonight? I'm going to guess that he might have gone 7 for 7. And so we'll talk about that with David and Jessica on why Eric lost. And then Dr. Mike, knock, knock, guess who it is? Dr. Mike. Steven, do you want to join me and co-host the Dr. Mike feedback show?
I would love to.
Oh,
but I think I'm busy.
I didn't even tell you when we were doing it.
I mean, we got a very busy couple of days coming up.
Get your feedback questions in. rob@website.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. And then Jenny Autumn will be our guest on This Week in Survivor. We'll talk about everything going on Survivor social media. And then we'll play the This Week in Survivor history quiz on Twists once again for this upcoming week. And then the Wiggle Room will be back. It's going to be a very special Wiggle Room this week. And then we will get into everything what Josh thinks about this episode. And then we will hear the episode number 8, Wandoffs.
Why a very special Wiggle Room?
You'll have to tune in to find out.
Oh, wow.
Tease. I'll tease it.
Yeah. Okay?
Of course, the people who make all of this podcasting possible are the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. They're the people who enjoy this type of content for some reason, and they like it so much they want to be a part of the Rob Has a Podcast, a patron community, and be able to share their thoughts about everything that's going on and get closer to the action, get access to our secret patron-only podcast feed and everything else we're doing over at robhasawebsite.com/patron, Stephen.
You are so good. I feel like you give a lot. You know, you really do give a lot to the patrons. Yeah.
Look, I try to give a lot. I try to give my all to the listeners, and then
even more.
Every last bit of me that's left to the patrons. That's my that's my attitude.
You've got a family and friends, Rob. No. You need to think about us.
Forget them. Yeah. There he goes. Patrons first, then the rest of you freeloaders, and then my wife and family. You know, they whatever's left.
Okay.
And you're up there. I'll be above it all, Stephen.
Oh, really? Oh, that's so great. Oh, that's all right. It's really exciting.
Okay. Oh. All right. Well, Stephen, what a show tonight.
This was fun. I love it when we really disagree. Those are my favorite shows.
Yeah. I just said that you felt so strongly that this was that they have driven the car off the cliff.
But it's not even that I felt strongly that it was. It was like I get mad. Okay, so I was triggered. It turns out I was triggered. I get mad when I see people who know the game do what I perceive is something that...
Who are you the most mad at, Julia?
I mean, both of them, you know, yeah, I think they're both obviously smart people. Allegedly they're both super fans. I thought she did well. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's like, how is this different than Tandang? You know, how is this different than Galoo? How is this different than Timbira or any of these tribes who have been so dominant and then just fall apart at the merge, turning on themselves before they vote out the others?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, well, this is maybe a different game. This is the edge of extinction. This is, you know, Survivor crazy time.
So all history is past. I guess you're more of a war dog.
That was those. We also have to adapt with the times. This is Survivor 38. Somebody's going to come back from the edge of extinction.
You know, it's interesting. Like, you know what distinguishes like a true chess master from like an average player? It's not that their like strategic thinking is necessarily better. Like, there have been MRIs done of chess masters, and the parts of their game, of their brain that light up aren't like when they're playing, aren't necessarily the parts like that are analyzing the situation. It's the parts that are remembering past games. It's the parts that are taking things that have happened in the past and applying them to now. And so I think like that is true. Right. Mastery. It's like being able to say, like, apart from what abstractly could be good, like what actually has been good, what things have worked. And obviously you do need to, you know, innovate and to find new things forward. But you also have to really be aware of the mistakes of the past.
Yeah. All right. Well, the good thing about this is that we're going to get to see how it all plays out here over the next month and a half, as we're only about, I think, 6 or 7 weeks from the finale, only 2 more weeks until you and I are together in person for our live show coming up in 2 weeks in Philadelphia. So be on the lookout for that. And then, of course, thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Take care, everybody. Have a great one. And my keyboard. Mouse is working. So have a great night, everybody. Take care. Bye. Survivor, no way to.